Log Talk Radio.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Holiday Road, Holiday Road. Hey, everybody. Oh, my God, it's Gordo. I'm back in the studio off the streets of New Orleans. That's where I was last God knows how many days, guys. Oh, my God, it was exciting. And welcome to the New Orleans show. I'm going to talk about all the grizzly, ghouly, crazy stuff that went down during my week, and we're going to try to do it in either an hour, and if we can't, we'll go to an hour and a half. Whatever, it's all good. Oh my God, I'm so glad to be back home. I don't even know what's happening anymore. It's just good times. It's good times all over the place. Anyway, I'm still not used to seeing this all empty. Isn't it sad?
Oh. Good riddance to blog talk.
It's sad. Anyway.
Screw them.
Sitting here tonight, guys, special treat. Here we go. We're introducing some new crazy stuff we got going on. New idea I had that hit me in New Orleans. We're going to change the show format a little bit. That's going to be hitting us later. I don't know, so you're going to want to kind of pay attention next week because the show format's going to change quite a bit. I'm just going to leave it at that. We're having a meeting after the show because it just sort of hit me when I was in New Orleans, and I got to run it by the other crew members, and we'll see what happens. But good times on that. Anyway, so sitting to my right, instead of one corpse, it's now two. I have Tech Guy Ed sitting to my immediate right. And our newest member, Gypsy Annie. Hello, Gypsy Annie.
Yay.
Hello! You guys did awesome last week, by the way. It was exciting. I wasn't really paying attention because I was in the middle of something. But
well, thank you.
So it was good time.
Nice to know that we're completely ignored by you.
I don't even listen to the show. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I was like, okay, you guys do it. Run it and see what happens. Oh, my God, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy in New Orleans. And I know you guys are just kind of like wondering what the hell exactly I did.
What the hell exactly did you do?
Funny that you say that. Oh my God, it was nuts. Well, I told you, okay, last Sunday, I had told you guys that I went to the D-Day Museum and I was doing the little, you know, ghost stuff, and I had started to dip my toes into the ghosty things. Oh my God. So I have been everywhere. I have done everything. I have just come short of blowing everybody in New Orleans. Here's what happens, okay? Techie Ed's like, were they alive? The corpses of the dead? What? What? That was kind of redundant, the corpses of the dead. As if I would say the corpses of the...
It's like a jumbo shrimp.
It just doesn't make sense. Thank God. Thank God. I'm so glad that I'm back. God, I think the absinthe is still coursing through my veins. I can't even talk. So anyway, it was insanity, guys. It was absolute insanity. And you know, I don't even know where to start because there was so much. There was vampires, there was voodoo, there was ghosts. I don't know even where to start anymore. So I'm going to give you guys kind of a haberdash run through of everything. I'm actually probably going to talk more about voodoo because that seems to be more of what I got my grimy paws on when I was down there. Did dip into the vampirism. did dip into the ghost stuff, but really I was more fascinated by voodoo. Completely fascinated by it. Bite it. Put the mic between you guys. We'll have some cohabitation here on your mic. Okay, so anyway. So I'm sitting here and I don't know if anybody listened last week. You should have. I don't even know. Do we even promote the show anymore? I don't even know. I just do it. I don't even have archives up. I don't even, like, nothing's updated. People probably don't even know we still do a show.
We know we do it. That's all that matters.
That's all that matters. The important people know we do it. Anyway, so last week, okay, I was telling you guys a couple little ghost stories, tell you some crazy stuff that happened. I was outside Jackson Square when I was on the phone with you guys doing the show, okay? Jackson Square is actually where New Orleans was founded. It's actually where it started. It's you know, basically the genesis of the city is Jackson Square. Then right across from it, you have the St. Louis Cathedral. Then on either side of those are actually, back in the day, they're different now, but back in the day there were political buildings. Like one of them served briefly as the seat of the Spanish government. Then after a while it was transferred to the governor's mansion, that kind of thing. So lots of cool little corridors. So basically the French Quarter is New Orleans. It is 1700s, 1800s, 1900s architecture and stories and legends and stuff all kind of transmigrated there when the city was founded. Kind of cool. But so that's where I spend a lot of my time. There is more of the city, but unfortunately that was the American section. So we don't want to go there. That was just boring. It was boring, I tell you. It's boring. I don't know, but just lots of crazy stuff happened, guys. And I know everybody out there is like, what exactly happened, Gore Girl? What was all this craziness in New Orleans? New Orleans! Anyway. Bing, a little side stretch there. Okay. So I'm going to tell you what happened after I got off the phone with you guys, because it started then. So I get off the phone with you guys. I start talking. It was by this time, I'm in Jackson Square at about midnight. Okay. Apparently, Jackson Square in the daytime is really for the tourists. But at night, the later you get, the more secretive and kind of – it's kind of for the – it's for the faint – not for the faint of heart kind of thing. You meet a lot of people there. You meet a lot of people there that know things about the city that most people will never know. Which is awesome. I'm glad we stuck around. It was like everything happens for a reason. So I start talking to one girl that I was talking to on the phone or during the show. Start talking to her. All of a sudden, you know, I make friends with her. I'm going to spare her name. Made friends with her. We're chatting, whatever. It's going on like 12:30. We're kind of hanging out. And we started really talking about just the nitty-gritty of New Orleans. And she kind of pulled me aside and she said, well, you know, she's like, I really like you. So I'm going to give you a couple tips. So she told me where to go, what to do, this kind of thing. Well, then she started telling me about all this other stuff that I didn't even ask about. It was almost like she was reading my mind. She started telling me about if I go to this certain section in town in the French Quarter, I'm going to be surrounded by the who's who or the higher-ups of the Vampire Society of New Orleans.
Ooh.
And I went, really? So I went, okay, took mental note. Then she told me if I go to this one section, this other section of French Quarter, which kind of is parallel to this vampire section, I'm going to be surrounded by the hardcore voodoo. And she said, now none of this is known by the tourists. You cannot just go in and grab a piece of paper and it'll say, oh, if you go here, so-and-so is here. You know, she said, it's in people's houses. It's, you know, there's little underground bars. There's you know, like, there's bars that to you look like, ah, oh, just looks like a local thing. Turns out that certain people meet there, that not a lot of people know that they're who they are, who they represent. And she said, so she was kind of giving me, she gave me a couple names, gave me a couple people I need to talk to. All right, I'm going to say this. This one guy in voodoo, I'm not going to say his name, lest I be killed. Also, it was a thing, too. I did not tape anything when I was down there except for ghost hunting because it's extremely disrespectful, I guess, I felt awkward doing it anyway, but I guess in the voodoo culture, it's disrespectful. It's almost like you're questioning their faith or you're questioning their beliefs, or they look at it as like a slight against them and their religion. So out of respect, I didn't tape any conversations, and I felt awkward even asking. I was like, oh, could I tape it, you know? So I, you know, just told them that I would be very respectful about what I said or what I say on air, and I would, you know, use names sparingly, and that I wouldn't give up too much intricate information that would possibly, you know, get them in trouble or whatever. So it kind of went along with this, and the more that I got involved with stuff, the more insane it got. So let's put it this way. This one guy, this voodoo guy that nobody knows, works in an innocuous shop that no one knows. It's like a front. Like, I will say it is a flower shop. So, and I'm using the fake quotations, people. So I go there, right? And I'm talking to this guy, and he will not do any information unless you pay. His test is, and I'm going to get more into voodoo as we go on. Test is, he has his giant-ass python about 4 inches of heart and are not there to harm him.
Ooh.
If you don't, the snake will strike your face.
The freaking snake knows?
I'll get into how big the snake is in voodoo, but... oh, my God. So let's just say these are the rituals that happen on a day in Maryland. So, and of course, the tourists are all at St. Louis Cathedral snapping pictures and look at the ferns in the shops, and I'm going to buy a T-shirt with a half-naked chick on it that I drink on Bourbon Street. While me, on the other hand, is in some back alleys talking to Joe Schmo and his mom about some secret, you know, voodoo cult that's going on. I know. This is just an example of the stuff that is there that people don't know about. So, okay, I talked to quite a few people about voodoo, and I said, you know what, here's what I know about voodoo, and here's what I don't know about voodoo. Now, what I'm going to do is wipe my mind clean, and I want to know every single true fact about voodoo that I can possibly get my hands on. I said, I want to know all about it. I said, when I walk out of New Orleans, I want to practically be able to go, if I qualified for the 3 steps it took to be a voodoo queen, which I don't, but with the knowledge I had, I said, this is what I want. I want to have enough knowledge where if I could, I could go through the you know, ritual and become a voodoo queen. This is how much I want to know. What can you tell me? I want to know the facts. I don't want to know the bullshit that Hollywood tells you in the movies and stuff. So, okay. So I'm slinking around all these alleys. I'm slinking in all these shops. I did go to a couple places that tourists can go to. They're known about. People can get to, which were very cool. They gave you a lot of the history and a lot of, like, the true facts of voodoo. But then when you start getting into incantations and you start getting into spells, you start getting all this stuff, that's where the back alley people come in. But no, as far as the history, wow. I will say that these two places, which any tourist can just walk into, these two places, this is where what do you want to know about voodoo as far as the history, as far as how it's practiced, as far as religion, here's where you go. If you want the specialty stuff, like how do I do this in this particular way, that's where my friend with the python and all his buddies come into play. So, should I just go with the voodoo? Are we starting with the voodoo?
Do
like,
voodoo.
I don't even
voodoo,
know.
Voodoo, voodoo, voodoo.
All right.
Voodoo.
So I wrote some notes down for myself because there's so much that I would screw things up immensely because I'm just so excited. I just took so much in on top of the absinthe. So we had to write some stuff down here. But my buddy, okay. I'm going to give you some of the history. We're going to get into some of the facts. I'm going to tell you some of the stuff I saw. We're going to get into this voodoo. So anybody that's interested in voodoo out there, hoodoo, Santeria, all the same thing. So, okay, here we go. Here we go. I'm going to give you a little thing. This, a lot of this information comes from the, the New Orleans Historic Voodoo Museum. When you're there, go talk to Dr. John. He's a voodoo priest. Very cool guy, very awesome, very knowledgeable. They also have a historian there that helps found the museum, helps put new exhibits up, who is just a historian in voodoo. And I'm actually talking with him about getting him on the show.
Ooh.
To talk more about the history. So very cool. Anyway, so you can get a lot of facts from them. And then I'll tell you about the voodoo temple I went to, the one that anybody can go to, which I definitely recommend checking out because something is better than nothing. Okay, so a little thing about voodoo. Let's get you guys inoculated on voodoo here, because the more you know about voodoo, the easier it will be for you, especially if you want to do something or someone wants to do something to you. I don't know. At least you'll know what the hell's going on. So anyway, I'm going to talk about a few random things. I'm just going to have random thoughts. You guys jump in whenever, because I'm just randomly talking and trying to tell you as much as I possibly can in the limited amount of time that I have. Okay? So on with it. You guys know Marie Laveau, right? Yes. Okay. The voodoo queen basically popularized voodoo, the American voodoo as we know it. Voodoo queen in New Orleans. Let's see. She specialized in, like, affairs d'amour and love potions. That's what she's known for. She presided over public ceremonies in Congo Square. She held secret rituals along Bayou St. John, private affairs on the Rue St. Anne. Rue de St. Anne. I think I mixed that one up. Anyway, so, like, she was, you know, born in 1801. She was a famous healer and leader of all the voodoos in New Orleans. Like, this woman's legendary. She pretty much, her picture pretty much is associated. I even have the picture on the website about me going to New Orleans. So very cool, very cool. We're going to get more into her. Actually, I'm just gonna tell you about her right now. Anyway, so she basically owned New Orleans for 20 years. She was the voodoo queen. She presided over everything. Nothing happened in New Orleans unless she knew about it.
Ooh.
She was feared. She was respected. After she passed on, some people call her a saint. Some people call her the most horrendous woman that walked the earth. Depends on your perception of what's going on. Anyway, so she was everything. She was a free woman of color. New Orleans, I don't want to get into the history of New Orleans, but okay, rewind a little bit. New Orleans had something different than nobody else in the country had. They had 54 codes on book for slaves, and they were completely different from anything else in the United States at this time. They were almost like liberal laws. Basically, the slaves were not to be beaten. They were not to be abused. They were to be treated like your family. They were to be educated. They were to have Sundays off. They were to there's 54 of these on the books, and they're still on the books in New Orleans. So anyway, it was the only, like, city at that time that had such, you know, I mean, yeah, it was sad that there's still slaves to begin with, but they at least, they were way ahead of the curve. So anyway, what could happen is your neighbors could tell on you if you were beating your slave or being abusive to your slave or doing something against one of the codes of ethics to these slaves, your neighbors could rat you out. It was considered an honor to rat your neighbors out if they were doing something against their slaves, because it was the whole Creole kind of mentality where they were proper, you know, they weren't animalistic, they were this, they were that. So it was an honor for you to rat on your neighbors. Also, the slave could go to the courthouse himself and say he's being abused. And then they would take him away and they would chastise the family and fine them, and there's, you know, possibility of imprisonment. Oh, yeah, they were really progressive. Then the other thing is the slaves could make money besides the family. So a lot of the black women would bake cakes on Sunday, go on the streets and sell them, and that money was theirs to keep. A slave could buy his freedom back and become a free man of color or a free woman of color. There was a section in New Orleans, section in the French Quarter by St. Louis Cemetery, number one, which that whole area was for the free black men and women of New Orleans. Eventually, you know, they just moved in anywhere in the French Quarter, but that was specific, you know, and they had the same laws. Once you were a free black man or woman, you had the same laws as any Frenchman in New Orleans. You were treated the same. You were treated with respect. You had the same, you got the same wage. You got the same, you know, you could go wherever you want. There was no segregation. Kind of funny, I mean, if you think about it. So all this is happening in New Orleans while all this other crap is happening everywhere else. So moving on. So she ended up being born of a plantation, you know, owner and this and that. Oh, yeah, and some of the slaves, I mean, they went on to own plantations, which they had slaves. They went on, one free black man went and ended up discovering the sugar cane system and discovered the type of sugar and, God, I can't remember what it was, some other ingredient that makes candy.
he was worth billions. Like, I got to see his place and everything.
I think he's the guy that went down to Florida. It was a similar story. There's a slave that went down to Florida, founded a church. I think he came from New Orleans.
I don't know. It's a possibility. So, I mean, just this whole thing was going on. So basically, she came. I'm not going to get into the whole backstory of her. If you like her, look her up. So anyway, she was basically a free woman of color. She, you know, descended on the city wherever she wanted, did whatever she, you know, wanted to. She was well respected. Even before this happened, she was a hairdresser. This was her vocation. Back in the day, hairdressers also had the license to perform minor surgical procedures, like removing boils and warts and stuff. So, I mean, here, you're cutting somebody's hair. Oh, I got a boil on your neck. Here, let me slice that. I'm like, oh, I'm never going to look at, like, the person that cuts my hair the same way again and be like, we do with those scissors.
Or you'd be like, I got this little worm in my back. Can you get it for me?
I got an itch right here. Can you cut that section out? I don't need it. It's fine. So it was just insane. So some say that some of her, you know, she had a legendary vocation, is that she was one of the greatest seers and healers of, you know, the 1800s, if not of all time. But a lot of people say that was because of her position, she was able to garner information about rich families. She was in their houses. She befriended a lot of slaves in their houses. She knew a lot of their comings and goings, a lot of things that were happening in their personal life. So a lot of that is true. But there's a lot of other things that she did and she predicted that there is no explanation for. So a lot of people do believe she really did have the second sight, just as how far it goes. We don't know, blah, blah, blah. But she was the voodoo queen. She was the one responsible for starting ritualistic dancing with snakes. She made that popular. I mean, she did a lot. A lot of the rituals malpractice in voodoo, she started, she initiated into it. Just great, great woman, great stuff that she did. I mean, who knows if she was really evil and did all the hexing that people say she did, but whatever. We're not going to get into it. It's fine. It's whatever. So I'm trying to think of what else. Because I could just go through this thing but, you know, that's no fun. Anyway, voodoo actually came to Louisiana from West Africa, okay? The word voodoo comes from the Fon people of Benin or whatever. The first record of voodoo in Louisiana came in 1719 with the arrival of the first slaves. It actually went from West Africa to the Caribbean back up to Louisiana. That's kind of the process of it, which I thought was very cool. In 1773, the term Gregory was recognized when a slave was accused of using voodoo to kill his overseer. Who knows?
Sure,
who knows if it really happened? I'm sure he didn't earn his money. I don't know. You know, by the early 19th century, voodoo dances in Congo Square were a regular Sunday event. Obviously, a priestess is called a queen. A priest is called a doctor, hence Dr. John. Go see him. He's a great guy. I love him. anyway, you also excuse me if I start slipping into accents or something, because I was down there and literally everything was swamp and Louisiana, and I just started talking like that by the last day. People were probably like, hey, you're local, huh? No, not at all. I've just been surrounded by this. And it's so funny because the accent gets so thick sometimes you can't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I could understand everything. I was just sitting there and I would just look at them and I'm like, oh, yeah. And everyone's like, how the hell did you know what she just said? I have no idea. Maybe I have my psychic gift is that I can understand Cajun.
Oh.
I'm seeing this. So, okay.
It's a different language down there.
Oh my God, it is swamp.
Do
I was like,
they teach that in college now?
They should. I think we should start a class.
German, French, Spanish.
All together. Cajun. No, and then a mix of all of them together called the potpourri language. Or the toilet bowl of language, whatever you want to call it.
Swamp of language.
Swamp. This is swamp. On the gray. Anyway. Anyway, we're talking about the Gregory bags or whatever. It's at the heart of what most perceive as voodoo. It is both an act and an object of magical supernatural power. That term
God, from everybody I talked to, was so universal. They use that for just about everything. Contrary to popular perception, however, voodoo, guys, is rarely used for evil. This is one thing I definitely found out for sure. Talking to everybody, they said there are certain people who use it for evil, but they're few and far between. The majority of them use it for good because it's that whole coming back to bite you in the ass kind of thing. So a lot of them don't mess with that. But a couple of the people that I did talk to in those back alley conversations had said that they had to, I don't know, war with or stop some of these people because they were getting out of hand. They were starting to mess with people. They had people coming to them and saying, can you help me? This person's texting me. This person's doing this. They're doing all these vile things. So there's been actual little voodoo wars going on where they tried to unhex the gree-gree that this person had put on this client or whatever you wanted to call this person. So kind of cool, but it's rarely used for evil. It really is. And I think that's a popular misconception because when you say voodoo, what's the first thing that pops in people's heads?
Voodoo doll.
Stabbing people, killing people. I mean, just all this crazy stuff. And it's really, everyone's like, it's so not like that. It's so spiritualistic and it's so, and I mean, I thought so to begin with. I never had a bad view on, yeah, okay, I almost screwed that word up. I never had a bad view on voodoo. So, I almost called it voodoo.
Me,
giggity, giggity, goo. So,
thank you, Wetwire.
There was a lot of giggity, giggity, goo in the alleys in New Orleans.
I bet there was.
I think I got some giggity, giggity, goo all over me.
Is that what that was on your pants?
I couldn't get it out. Those damn tie pens don't work.
It's all crusty now.
It's a California potato chip now.
Oh.
Yo.
They're nuts.
Yes, Jessica said. That's awesome. So, anyway, voodoo is basically used for, there's four basic categories, love and sex, power and domination. Can go hand in hand sometimes. Fortune and luck and uncrossing or undoing another's, you know, gree-gree towards you. Anyway, I'm going to get into all this stuff, guys. There's some crazy stuff going on. I'm just going to, like, give you a potpourri of voodoo stuff because it's nuts. I can't tell you everything that I heard and learned down there because we don't have enough time. It would be 6 weeks of shows if I told you everything I heard about voodoo. So I'm going to give everybody kind of a roundabout jump in to the whole voodoo thing. Anyway, we'll do with, like I told you about the four categories of voodoo. The whole faith and practice is in supernatural beings or powers. All the practitioners understand that the forces and magic of voodoo occur exclusively by the intersection of supernatural powers or spirits. There are three levels to them of spirituality: God, spirits, and ancestors. God is recognized as detached and removed from everyday events and concerns, and therefore it's the spirits that intercede and interact with mortals. Now, the spirits are actually Catholic saints. This is twofold. One, because there's a lot of similarities between them, because voodoo itself had a lot of roots in Catholicism. Like, it took a lot from Catholicism and made it their own. But the other thing is, when the slaves came over here, they were banned from practicing anything. You know, they weren't, especially when they got, you know, from the Caribbean and jumped back over here, they weren't allowed to practice anything, to have rituals, to dance, you know, to worship anything. So to them, the only thing they were allowed to acknowledge was whatever their slave master believed in, you know, because that was, they were given the rudimentary religion of whatever house they belonged to. So basically, you know, it was a Catholic city at that time. So basically they could get away with worshiping voodoo by just symbolizing whichever god it was with Saint Michael or Archangel Michael, whatever. So just by flipping in different characters, they could, right under the noses of their slave master, worship voodoo. So nowadays they're just intermingled. So basically it's pretty much the same thing, the saints, the spirits. So which is kind of cool on that. Anyway, the practitioners serve the spirits by means of voluntary possession. Possession's a big part of this religion. In a voodoo ceremony, the spirits act out carnal desires of their human host through eating, drinking, smoking, dancing, singing, and sexual gratification.
This is so essential and universal, the dancing. I've heard so many different ways. I learned a lot of the rituals. I could perform rituals right here for you guys. I learned a lot of the rituals with voodoo, and basically that's why, you know, everybody nowadays knows that it's the dancing religion, because it's very essential for what you have to do. Blah, blah, blah. You got, you know, the superstition. You got a candle, a potion, a doll, a gree-gree bag, a secret phrase has power exclusive to itself. A spell, hex, charm, curse, or conjure acting self-sufficiently often is employed by a person with little or no real knowledge that that's part of the voodoo spirit superstition. All this crap that you see, these commercially made potions, curio shops, these crazy people make those damn dolls, that's all bogus. I mean, go to somebody authentic or make your own stuff. You know, you can talk to these people. They'll tell you how to make stuff. They told me how to make, you know, authentic, you know, charms and authentic, you know, dolls and authentic, you know, things. So don't buy this crap. That, you know, especially New Orleans, everything's voodoo. So they're like, look it, on Bourbon Street. You can buy a voodoo doll. And it's some piece of crap cloth thing that they threw together in the back room. I mean, just don't fall for that bullshit. So anyway, the oral traditions of an area or culture were handed down from generation to generation. So obviously, which gets into my three things about voodoo, unfortunately I can't participate. Anyway, it's everywhere. It's fables, art, celebration, language, expression. There's so much of the folklore in our society right now that we don't even know it. Like I said, the primary person is Marie Laveau. She was, you know, just a thing. So what do they say? Voodoo secret societies have evolved. Old voodoo dances in Congo Square are now jazz. That's kind of how jazz got started. The Rougarou is a swamp creature. I saw this guy. They made a, there's a huge statue of him at one of the places. Oh, my God, it's awesome. The Rougarou is a swamp creature. He's a cross between a werewolf, a vampire, and a zombie. And obviously the common, there's a common thing where, you know, you rub your doorstep with red brick dust for protection, which is a folklore practice. Louis Armstrong as a kid actually sold red brick dust to the prostitutes in the French Quarter.
I think I read that somewhere.
Because the prostitutes were actually along that strip where the free black men and women's section was, right by St. Louis Cemetery number one. Kind of awesome. Screw that. We're going to get on to the crap that I want to talk about. So anyway, okay, rituals. Here you go, guys. Take it, eat it, love it, okay? Rituals. Here's an example of a voodoo exorcism, okay? All the evil entities are drawn out and burped. They're burped out. Burnt up in hot coals balanced on the practitioner's head, okay? White candles are set to burn to protect the participants from evil. Sometimes a statue of the Virgin Mary is placed there to protect, to provide protection and sanctify the space, okay? In all ceremonies, not just the voodoo exorcism, in all voodoo ceremonies, food is offered first to the spirits and can be eaten later after blessed. What do you got here? Your main altar, okay? If you're going to practice voodoo, this is typically what you'll see at your main altar. Picks or statues of Catholic saints to represent the voodoo spirits. Candles, incense, oil, cigars used as offerings. There's always a glass of water present to absorb negative energies. You also sprinkle a few drops on your altar to replenish the spirits daily. There's usually a pole or some sort of apparatus in the center, which is believed to help the spirits channel down to you. Ceremonies, you have the food and the drink like I was telling you about. Dances are always offered to the spirits to facilitate the possession of the dancer by the spirits. That is believed to be the only way in voodoo to, besides unless you're an oracle and you're channeling the ancestors, that's the only way to have the full force and the full energy of these deities come to you is through the dance rituals. And there's so many. Oh, my God. It's crazy. Okay. What I'm going to tell you is this. Okay, juju, right? I say the word juju all the damn time, right? Okay, it's beings or symbols who usually ward off evil spirits. If you get bad juju, obviously not doing its job. Okay, the black cat juju is hung in houses on All Saints Day and Day of the Dead to protect against evil spirits. They actually had a dried cat carcass.
No, they didn't.
With its mouth fully open and the fangs hanging out, hanging over the door.
No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was awesome.
Oh,
I totally took pictures. I was like, oh, that is awesome.
I should have saved the dried cat carcass I found in my old house in the crawl space.
You could have. If you hung it on those days, you'd be protected. What's wrong with you? Now, this is cool, and I saw a really eerie painting of this, which I so want. I don't care. We have to go steal it, I guess. So let's go. Next time we go to New Orleans, we're jacking stuff. Anyway, it's called Le Loup Garou. It's a werewolf-type creature that has the ability to shapeshift. It's usually a female in Cajun lore. She preys on children and young lovers because she's jealous. Okay? Usually a snake will ward her off, things like that, and warn you of impending doom that you're about to get mauled by this thing. Now, also they have Le Akelamon, which is the gator man. He protects against the Le Loup Garou, and hoodoo practitioners honor him in the spring when the alligators come out of hibernation. So you've got all these little, I mean, voodoo, I'm not even getting into the start of it. There are so many creatures and mythical characters in voodoo. It's awesome. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Somebody needs to do a movie just about the characters and the mythology. Wow. Awesome. Awesome characters. Creatures. Oh, my God. It's like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Just creatures and creatures and creatures. Just wow. Okay. How does one become a voodoo queen? This is why I can't become a voodoo queen.
Tell us, Gorgor.
Because I do not fit rule number one. Okay. How does one become a voodoo queen? This also, I guess, applies to the males. But three basic requirements, guys. First of all, you must be at least a second generational voodoo.
Aww.
I'm the only one in my family that would join voodoo.
Aww.
Two, you cannot place money between you or your work. You could ask for donations but cannot deny help because of inability to pay. Three, you must pay the damage of interceding into the path of fate. Everything you do is a consequential effect, illness, bad luck, or at least fatigue. So, I mean, God damn, I can't do that. It sucks.
So the next time you're really tired, that's some voodoo gone bad?
No, I guess I can't do it. I can't be a voodoo queen. I can practice voodoo, but I can't be a voodoo queen. So anyway, ancestor worship is extremely important, okay? Departed family members are honored. Without them, we wouldn't be here, right? Due to the belief of transmigration of souls, ancestors can be reborn at any time within the child of the same tribe. You are basically to placate these ancestral spirits with, like I said, food, drink, prayers to help them obtain peace. They actually, like, seriously guide you. They come down and guide you. They're a huge, huge part of the voodoo religion, which is awesome. I mean, it's like putting the dead to work, you know? The voodoo, I totally believe in that. Give them welfare checks or something. I don't know. The voodoo system of divination, guys, it allows them to speak through an oracle. So, I mean, just lots of cool things. We talked about the Grigri, which is a powerful Creole charm, usually carried in a red flannel bag with a black cord. God, they make it with all sorts of natural stuff, guys. So if you're out there listening and you want to make yourself your little charm bag, roots, herbs, snake skin, bones, stones, animal parts, each of these things by itself represents a spirit. You combine them properly, the owner, you will actually gain spiritual power. God, they use them for money, health, success, blah, 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 blah. They're mostly used for positive, but some can be used for hexing. We know this. Voodoo dolls! All right, guys, get your pens and paper out. How to make the doll represent someone. I'm actually giving people, like,
the recipe for
things of how to do stuff. You know, I already told you how to make a gree bag. I already told you, you know, what you need to do to be a voodoo queen. Here's how to make voodoo dolls, guys. Well, not how to make them. I mean, they're pretty easy to make. You can get a stick and do this. How to make the doll represent someone. Pin their picture to the doll. You could do number two, write their name on a piece of paper and pin it to the doll. You could do number three, draw their face or likeness on the doll. Now for the good part. How to make the doll part of somebody.
Oh.
You put their hair or fingernail clippings inside the doll. You wrap a piece of the person's clothing inside the doll, not outside. You rub the doll against the person. Now, you place the voodoo doll in the vicinity of the person, but always, big, big always, I don't know how many times this was stressed upon me down there, always keep it hidden. Most dolls are not used for evil purposes, but they're used for love, healing, success, money, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, you see things like Witches of Eastwick where they're stabbing Jack Nicholson with it. It's all good. Did you know that the Vatican actually acknowledges voodoo as a religion because it had
some of its roots when slaves were here in Catholicism. So they actually, there's actually a picture of one of the top voodoo priests of like the 80s or something meeting with the Pope.
Wow.
And he was like, hey, what's up? And they're like, hey, and they're chanting. Oh, it was awesome. Good times. Okay. Let's see. What do I want to talk about? Important figures to know. There's some in here that you will enjoy because I know I did. Okay. Important figures to know. If you're going to do your sacrifices, you have to know where to go through and what to do. First of all, you cannot perform any voodoo ritual without calling first the gatekeeper and asking him if it's okay to do the ritual and if it's okay to call whatever deity that you want to come forth. So you have to call the gatekeeper first or you're in big trouble. That's just how it is. All right. The very most important figure in voodoo, which goes with the snake thing, is Le Grande Zombie. He's also known in Haiti as Dembala, which all the horror fans out there will know that that's what Charles Lee Ray used and called upon to get inside the doll of Chucky. Anyway, he's the most important and powerful. He manifests himself through the snake. Yes, we get this. Throughout the world, the snake is a symbol of many things, okay? You see it all the time. It represents creation of the world. It represents death, rebirth, sickness, healing, male and female. It's the male-female thing that's important in voodoo. This is what they're really striving for. The duality is often seen as Dembala Wido and his wife Ada Wido, okay? The snake spirit allows you to reach beyond duality and in ritual dances symbolizes the union of male and female, the fertilization of the earth by the lightning from heaven. This is why voodoo dances are supposed to be performed by women. They're performed by a woman who is usually nude. This is for a purpose. This is not some sexual thing that some 70s porn maker made. The ritual dances are supposed to be performed by a woman who is nude because it's up to her to draw down the male spirits from the sky because the female spirits are the earth. She's supposed to draw the male spirits from the sky, so by being naked and doing a ritualistic dance, she's enticing them down. And when the male and female energies meet, that is when ultimate duality is created. It's this ultimate ambiance that's set. It's like this horizon line of ultimate, you know, power. That is when the ritual will begin. That is when, you know, your deity will come through you. That is when the powers will be restored. That is when whatever it is you're seeking will be answered or, you know, whatnot, whatever you're trying to attain will be reached. You know, like I said, Marie Laveau popularized the snake theory. This makes a lot of sense because he is the god, you know, this is the snake spirit. This is the male-female snake spirit. So that kind of makes sense that you would incorporate a spiritual animal into the ritual. So she's, nowadays it's commonly used in the rituals to seal the fate of whoever or basically whatever's taking place. So the snakes nowadays, guys, actually seal the deal. Like, it's not legit without the snake now. Okay, so like I said, I was talking about the females, whatever. The dancer becomes possessed by Le Grande Zombie. And so on and so forth. So anyways, one very good guy that everybody has seen, especially on Halloween, because you remember the skeleton guy with the top hat and the cane and the gloves? Yes, that's actually Baron Samedi. Yeah, yeah.
Really?
It's actually a voodoo god that we have incorporated into Halloween, not even knowing it.
Yay!
Huh? He's actually the most feared. He's actually the most feared of all the Lao. He is the keeper of the cemetery. He's a member of the, I can't remember how they said it. It was like, it said like three different ways, but I'm probably going to make up a fourth way that's not even said. But he's a member of the Gide family, which is death. He's a member of the death family. So all members in this family have the powers of black sorcery and necromancy. So
I like him.
Yeah. He's the most, this guy, okay, the most powerful gods cannot accomplish any spells or magic without his approval or his permission.
You are to stay away from him.
Why?
No conjuring, contacting, talking to, or anything else.
And get this. Oh, you'll like this. He's usually given an offering of tobacco and rum.
Why? You two jackasses will be bringing a bottle of Jameson. So, hey, I got this.
Hey!
What a shot.
Yen and I got top hats on. We're drinking with the Baron. Awesome. Anyway, Baron Samedi's wife, Bridget, she's also a big figure. She has authority over ceremonial rites for the corpse of the female. so kind of cool. Okay, then I'm just going to name some other spirits that you could, I mean, there's tons of spirits and deities, but these were just some that kind of stuck out to me in a quick, like, run-through. Agwe is the queen of heaven and earth. Aida Wido, who's the goddess of rain and rainbow. I didn't know there, you know, people wanted to harness the power of the rainbow, but go for it. Boys Town, woo! So call the gas company and turn down that flame. We just lost all our listeners. So, oh, General Dig, who is a relative of Baron Samedi, who digs graves. Good times. He's got a good job. Agu, who's the blacksmith of gods. He's the warrior god, deity of fire, power, wisdom. He's a good guy. Ibo Lele, who's the forest god or spirit. Perfect Dufant is the devil. Shango is the war god. And Sagbo is the god of lightning. Does it sound good? It sounds good.
Yeah.
Yes, it sounds good. Oh, I got some other good stuff to tell you. Oh, yeah, zombies. Oh, because we all know zombies are part of this big-ass religion, right? Okay, zombies, guys, were documented in Haiti, but few and far between occurrences. It really doesn't happen too much anymore. A person is chosen by the king or queen and is given a special potion consisting of specific plants and poisons, including poison from a blowfish. And I got to see a giant puffed-out blowfish that somebody had kept that they extracted the poison from to perform one of these rituals. This causes total paralysis, although the person is alive, awake, and alert. The person is then buried alive during the ritual. After several hours, the person is unburied and revived with an antidote, okay? They were considered to have communicated with the dead during this ordeal, and having their spirit shattered by the experience resulted in them being docile and easily dominated. Ritual is often called life after death. Nowadays, it's actually created by them doing this giant dance. They just do a dance. No one gets buried. They do this big dance. They hold these little black coffins, and they dance until they're exhausted, and they are supposed to reach when they hit ultimate exhaustion of their bodies. That's when they're supposed to reach communication with the dead. So it's like a tame, you know, kind of version of, you know, what's actually going on. Okay. Then, because of the old way they did it, where they buried people and, you know, this whole thing, I actually saw a 100-year-old Haitian zombie whip.
What?
Used to whip zombies. Because when the person's docile and easily dominated, how are you going to dominate them? You beat them with a whip. So, it was cool. I want it.
I think we have to try this.
I want one. Oh, then, I also, I'm not going to repeat it on air because I'm not sure how to pronounce all the words, but I also saw an incantation for how to raise the zombies.
Yeah, you're not repeating that.
I have it. I have it in my possession. But when I figure out how to say all the words, oh, it's on like Donkey Kong. Yet and I have to do it on air one night.
You just have it. No, what we can do is you summon the Buddha zombies, I'll summon the zombies from the Necromonica. That's true.
As Yan is shaking her head.
And we'll have like a huge zombie battle royale.
Yes! Jello wrestling zombies! Yes! Oh my god, that would be awesome! We could sell popcorns and little Undertaker hats, it'd be great! It would be awesome! And then we watch the zombies jello wrestle while Yan is over there talking about the Necronomicon.
Then the winner gets to take over the world.
Sounds good to me.
My angels will be working overtime that day.
We're channel wrestling.
I'm
going
to stay home.
No.
I can see that. Our zombies are battling Royale and the Jello, and here's Gypsy Annie with her Bible going, I cast you all to hell.
Here comes an angel in the pit. He does an elbow smash on one of his eyes.
Oh my god, it's a clothesline.
It's a three-way.
It's Michael with his flaming sword. What the hell? That's not fair. Zombies don't have flaming swords. Also, we got the propane tanks out. We're setting the whole damn jello pit on fire. That would be the most awesome thing in the whole world. It would be. It would totally be awesome.
I bet we'll do commentary for it.
I got one last thing to say about voodoo, and then I don't know. Okay, voodoo versus hoodoo. What's the difference, right? Okay, voodoo is Afro-Creole Catholicocentric. Hoodoo is Afro-American assimilated. Hoodoo is, they actually say, I mean, it's not really true, but this is kind of how a lot of people generalize it in their head. Voodoo is Africa
and Africa going to Caribbean, and hoodoo is Caribbean and Caribbean going to New Orleans. That's kind of how they did that. But it's not really true because there's a lot of voodoo in New Orleans. Voodoo, original tribes from Africa. Obviously, hoodoo, slaves in Anglo-America, you know, did not as a whole come from the area of the Fon or, you know, where the thing is. But the practices are recognized as voodoo, so it's kind of sketchy. Okay, this is your ultimate decipher. Voodoo, the oo, is usually led by a queen, because in voodoo, the female is the most important character. Often operated within a Catholic church, it retains the serpent spirit, which you talked about, and it's culturally integrated in folklore, art, music, and special occasions, which, I mean, it's all over our society. Hoodoo is usually led by a spiritualist bishop, has its own separate church, and has adopted the Indian spirit Black Hawk and other symbols and practices. It's generally culturally segregated. However, I went to a voodoo temple, which you can all go to. I saw a lot of other voodoo altars, but those were private altars with private people, and there was private sex in this area. There's private sex in the alley. No, seriously. So I go, right, and I go to the temple. And this was the first voodoo temple I went to. There was other ones with my back alley friends that would allow me to see, but this is one that all the tourists can go to. It's right there. It's on, I can't remember the damn street, but you can look it up. It's the voodoo, I want to get it right now for her because I love this woman. It's the Voodoo Spiritual Temple. You can go to voodoospiritualtemple.org, okay? Priestess Miriam is her name. She was a cool lady when I talked to her. I recommend everybody going there. If you want to check out a voodoo temple, go see her. She owns a shop, which she sells a lot of voodoo-type things, a lot of voodoo, you know, macabre stuff that you could buy, a lot of magic stuff that she puts together there. You go through this alley, like this hallway, and it's floor to ceiling, all the way in this long hallway, which has to be about 15 feet long, floor to ceiling jars of every size with what's in them on there, everything, every possible concoction or herb or anything that you would need for any kind of ritual is in these jars. That's where they make a lot of their potions and stuff like that. Then you go out the back door, and you come around, and you enter the temple. You have to be invited into the temple. You can't just walk into a voodoo temple. You have to be invited in. So you go in, and just everywhere. I mean, everybody's altars are different. Everybody's temples are different. But you walk in, and essentially, it's everything. It's a mishmash of every kind of statue, picture, artifact, token, spiritual relic, everything, everywhere, colors, and it's like your mind is assaulted by what you see. It's so much in so little space. It is customary, okay? You do not give money to the priestess or the priest of the temple. You do not give them money, okay? What you do is, if you want, you're supposed to, you take your money, and you are drawn to something in the temple. Whatever you're drawn to, you go and you stick your money in that. So when you walk into the temple, you'll see dollar bills, coins, stuff sticking out of everywhere. It just sticks there and it stays there. It's an offering to the gods almost. So you go in, you're invited into the altar area. And I had the pleasure of meeting her. She's a great lady. She does a lot of the like tourist stuff. She invites the tourists in. She's, I think, probably the only person in New Orleans that invites you into their voodoo temple. So very cool. It's very much for the tourists. You guys can go there, check her out. Awesome, awesome stuff. Don't ask her questions about how voodoo is started or anything to do with it because it's disrespectful. It is, you don't ask these people what's the history? What do you believe in? How do you do this? You just don't ask. If they don't tell you, you don't ask. You want to learn that stuff, you go to the Voodoo Museum with Dr. John, and you can read all your little back history and stuff. And, of course, the spells and the rituals, you have to be invited into their little sect before you are given any rituals, any potions, any of their secrets. So very cool stuff going on down there. Crazy, though. Because you know what's funny is the tourists see the museum, they see the spiritual temple, they meet a couple of the voodoo practitioners, and then that's it. But when you actually start going down the streets of New Orleans, you actually start getting into people's homes, you start talking to people, my God, it's like, it's mind blowing. It's really mind blowing to hear these people talk and to watch, you know, them practice and the, you know, they have, you know, they have jars and stuff and they have little skulls and they have, you know, things. I mean, they're mixing things and, you know, I walked into these places and the feeling I got was so overwhelming. I felt like I was a small, tiny little grain of sand in this huge spiritual universe. It was mind-blowing, guys. I can't even explain it. And these guys are cool. These guys are awesome. But just insane. Insane stuff that happens there. Just crazy. It's cool, though. It's really cool. So, I don't know. Any questions about voodoo?
That's awesome. That's all I can say. It's awesome.
It was so totally bad. And if you come down with me, because we're talking about going back, if you come down, I will have to take you to these places because they're crazy.
Please do.
I'll be like, you must pass the Python test. Rawr! All of a sudden, Ed's face gets chewed off. I'd be like, is there a hairdresser around? Can we get that song back on?
There's one of two things that will happen if a Python goes on. It'll either bite my face off or it'll crawl on me. And I'm serious.
Which I hope it bites their face off because I just want to see it.
I think it would be cool if it just starts crawling on me because for some reason pythons love me. Like, they love crawling on me.
We want to see what a bit-off face looks like. That's what we want.
Yeah, that's what we want.
All right, I'll communicate with it. I'll tell it to bite my face off so that you can see it, but then it has to give me a billion licks.
This will be interesting.
Would that be okay for you guys?
No. Now, this will be interesting because – a regular snake, okay, the voodoo priests and priestesses are very touchy about their snakes. They are not just snakes. The snakes that they have are spiritual beings that have gone through rituals and incantations and potions. So they're not your average bear as far as a snake is concerned. These creatures only respond to their masters. They only respond to whatever deity is associated to their person. They will not, you know, they probably won't crawl on you. They'll just rear up and either let you go or attack you, but they won't touch you because you're not their deity. You're not their, what they're infused with. So, and they're very touchy about the snake issue down there. I mean, these guys, the snakes are like more important than you or Maya's life to them. It's just, it was wild. And I mean, I was talking to these people about their snakes and I actually felt like they were my children. I was like, oh my God. And that is why one of the most important things you can have in your altar or your bags or whatever, anybody out there, snakeskin. Not any snakeskin. Get snakeskin from one of the snakes used in the rituals. Get snakeskin from a priest or priestess or queen or doctor of voodoo. Get one from them because I swear to God, it will charge you your stuff. Like, if it's powerful, it'll be like a million times more powerful. Like, that's how hardcore their snake thing is in voodoo. It's awesome. It's awesome. We got to go. I got to show you guys because it's just freaking cool as hell. So, and I got a couple of the snake skins from the ritual snake. It was awesome. I'm like licking them and like, I love you, little snake skin. No, but I want to see it. I mean, I'm pretty sure you just passed right away, but I don't know. It's still be cool. Somebody's face got that off. Whatever. I'm volunteering you, goddammit. Just do it.
Bye.
All right.
I'll
you know what?
My energy toxic for that day.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to go to commercial. When we come back, we're going to talk about ghosts and vampires. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
That sounds good to me. Yeah.
And now a word from our sponsors.
Frontless Craven, director of A Nightmare on Elm Street.
It has deep sense we keep these in from ourselves.
He came in search of the truth. What he found was a world where the dead never die.
I want to hear you speak to you. Dirty me. I'm not dead.
Wes Craven's The Serpent and the Rainbow. Rated R.
Nolan! Oh my God! It was awesome. It was freaking awesome. I'm so charged. Oh my God! Ghost stuff. Gotta tell you about ghost stuff. Gotta tell you about ghost stuff. Okay. All right. Oh my God. First of all, I found out something crazy happened that I didn't even know. I had a paranormal experience and didn't even know about it until like 10 minutes ago.
Okay.
Do tell.
I went to Oak Alley Plantation. It's one of the biggest plantations out there. It's one of the oldest. Wherever you go, you do the tour. You tour the grounds, okay? I'm not even paying attention. I didn't even know it was haunted. I didn't do any research on it or, like, you know, wasn't even caring or anything. Oh, my God, where is it? Because I'm totally, like, I can't even believe it. Okay. Supposedly, I'm flipping through this book, you know, this ghost book. I was doing it before the show. I'm like, oh, I just want to make sure I hit the stories, you know, whatever. And I was like, what? Apparently, Oak Alley is haunted. And apparently,
ooh,
I had an experience. Okay.
Ooh,
when I was there, there's a cemetery on the grounds of some of the former owners. I walked out there, right? And there's nobody around. I mean, it was a beautiful summer day, nobody around. Everyone's outside. We're all drinking mint juleps and, you know, people are smoking. So I'm not thinking nothing of it, right? I go over there by myself and I'm taking pictures and I'm just kind of like relaxing and hanging out, looking at the beautiful cemetery and just kind of, you know, doing my usual thing with it. And all of a sudden I smell this really strong cigar smell. I didn't think nothing of it because I had seen some guys, you know, smoking cigarettes. So, I mean, what's the big difference? Somebody smokes a cigar, you know? I mean, people are smoking all over the place. I don't know, you know? Could be anything. Could be anybody. Somebody could just reek of cigar smoke, you know? I don't know. So I'm totally not thinking anything paranormal at all. I'm just like, okay, whatever, you know? But it was overwhelming. I was like, okay. So we go back and we spend the rest of the, you know, day there. We end up getting back in the car because we're going to go back to the French Quarter. And we get in the car. And I smelled it again really strong right in front of me in the car. And I start smelling my clothes like, did I walk in somebody's cigar smoke? What the hell happened? So I totally didn't think anything of it. So anyway, the story here is that a former owner who watches protectively over the property as visitors are there, and there he's sensed by his aroma of cigar smoke.
Oh no.
And I was like, what?
No.
my spooky senses were flailing out of control. Now, remember that murder thing I was talking about with Nicolas Cage?
Murder.
And I wouldn't tell you what it was?
Yeah.
You want to know?
Yeah.
You want to know what it was?
Yeah.
I like murder.
Okay. Nicolas Cage bought this place. He is so far the only owner to stay there longer than 5 years. However, he does not live there. He bought it. He will eat lunch and dinner there, but he refuses to sleep there.
And what place is this?
This, guys, is the Lurie Mansion. The Lurie Mansion. You guys have heard of it, right? It is the most famous story in New Orleans. Okay, I'm going to sum it up. What the hell's her name? Madame Lurie and her husband from France, blah, 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 blah. They come over. They have tons of money. Tons and tons and tons of money. More money than anybody possibly could have had at that time. They built a huge mansion in the French Quarter, right? They have tons of slaves. Now, at the time, slaves could run you about a grand. And not many people, a lot of people's incomes at that time were like $960 a year, you know?
Right.
So who the hell, you know, can afford a lot of slaves? If you did get one, it was usually one slave per household. Well, anyway, they had like something like, I think they lost count, but there was something like, somebody said once it was over like 20 slaves. It was over 30 slaves. They had an absorbent, you know, slave thing going on. So anyway, no one really thought about it. Well, they were very, very strict disciplinarians, okay? They would like, I mean, they didn't care about the 54 codes of New Orleans. You know, here they're from their other country, and they're like, we're going to do what the hell we want on our slaves. They beat them, abuse them, just totally do horrific things to them. She used to chase one of the little girl slaves who was about 12 years old, would brush the madam's hair in the morning. And I guess she caught a little snag, you know. It's not her fault the bitch's hair is knotty. So she goes and she comes in. Well, because it snagged on the comb, she turned around with a whip and started chasing the girl around, beating her with the whip. Bitch, you should have found conditioner then, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, I know, just crazy little things like this. Well, apparently, she loved to throw parties, the hostess she was. She was known all throughout New Orleans for their lavish parties. They'd have the finest music, the finest caviar, the finest everything, you know? And they'd invite the who's who, so they were like top of the society thing. And that, a lot of people kind of let the slave abuse thing go because they had gobs of money. They would just fine them like $300. And return the slaves to them or whatever, you know. So it wasn't, they got away with a lot of crap. Well, people didn't realize just how dastardly they were. Her husband was sort of like a physician at that time, okay? Anyway, they're having this huge party.
And a fire breaks out. So the two slave guys come running up to her and go, you know, madame, madame, there's a fire. And she goes, well, you know, that's not a big deal. What are you telling me for? Go get the fire department. So they go and they run down to the fire brigade and bring them. So she's taking all the guests outside. The immaculate hostess brings them all outside, tells the band, keep playing music. You know, the slaves that were out there still had their hors d'oeuvre plates and their wine and stuff. You know, keep serving the guests. We'll continue the party in the street until this little matter is sorted out. Apparently, the fire was started by a slave woman who was tied to the stove. They come in, they put the fire out, and she's completely burned. And they're like, why, you know, you're mad, woman. Why would you start a fire and you get all burnt up? And she goes, because I was trying to escape. I have to get out of here. I have to get out of here. And they're like, well, what's going on, you know? And she's like, they're like, you know, we're going to search and make sure everything's okay. She's like, go to the third floor. That's all she would say, search the third floor, search the third floor. She wouldn't say anything else. They search the first floor, nothing. Search the second floor, nothing. Everything's immaculate. They get to the third floor. There's a room that's locked. And they're like, why is this room locked? So they go, and they're trying to open it. They eventually knock the door down, heeding her advice to search everything, knock the door down, and the smell and stench of decay hit them. I mean, these are hardcore guys who have dealt with death a lot, you know, in the city's beginnings, keeled over by this stench. They go in and it's hard to see, and there's just bodies and random things and just corpses and stuff. This was what New Orleans was famous for. It's called the blemish of New Orleans. There was a girl that they had cut her arms off, amputated her arms. And they took 1 inch of skin, starting at the top of her head, and peeled her around.
What?
She became known as the Caterpillar Girl because all she could do was get on the floor. I mean, they amputated her organs off. All she could do was go on the floor like a caterpillar, and the spiral of missing skin gave her distinction of a caterpillar woman. So they found her. They found another woman. They heard these muffled.
This girl was still alive when they found her?
All these people were still alive. Most of them were still alive. They found this girl, or this woman, who they was in a, I can't remember how big, like probably no bigger, a little bit bigger than a bread basket. They found her stuffed in one of these baskets in the corner, and they heard all this muffling and this screaming. They're like, what is that? They go and they pop it open. They had broken all her bones in weird ways, so the only way she could crawl was like a crab, and they called her the Crab Lady. They had, I mean, her limbs were literally jutting out in weird positions, so that the only way she could get around was to get down and kind of do a crab movement. They there was a man tied to a table. They had tried to do a kind of like a castration, but they went too far, and just complete mutilation all up his body. Just there were so many of these slaves that were missing arms and limbs and just weird freak experiments done to them. Who knows? So anyway, they're like, holy crap, so they get these people out of here, right? Well, the Lollaries, this mob's gathering now because they're all like realizing whose mansion this is and who's doing this. And they're like, I can't believe, you know, I just thought they were abusive to their slaves. I didn't know that they were mutilating them and creating freak experiments. So they decide they send like a mob after them. They escaped New Orleans. And they went back to their country. There's rumors that they came back to get some of their stuff, but then they fleed again, and then they might still lived in Louisiana, just a little bit further north of New Orleans. So you don't know if they still live in New Orleans or they went back to their country. But there's also a rumor that her corpse was flown back to New Orleans and buried in the house somewhere. Just all these stories, right? Now, here's the ghost stories. For days after, when the house was evacuated and the Lollaries were gone, they were hearing screams and muffled stuff and footsteps and banging the neighbors. So they called people to go in. They searched the place, couldn't find anything. A few days after that, it was going on like a couple weeks after this had happened, they went in and decided to pull the floorboards up. I can't remember the whole thing behind it. They had buried alive slaves under the floorboards of the house. And there were scratch marks. So they think that it wasn't a ghost story, that the people who were hearing these muffled screams were people under the floorboards trying to get out. But the thing is, this was back then. Nowadays, people still say they hear that. They still hear footsteps. They still hear banging. They hear screams. There's a smell of death. every person that's owned it, they've had it at shops, a family had it a couple times. Every owner seems to only have it for 5 years. And then that's it. It seems to be like a curse. You know, things move. They see shadows. You know, at one point it was a girls' reformatory, and the girls thought it was funny, you know, all these stories, and they're trading ghost stories back and forth. Well, the nuns eventually closed it down after 5 years because there was, you know, figures of people running up and down the hallways at night, and there was men, ghost men, coming into the girls' rooms and talking to them, and they're like, well, we don't care what's going on. We got to close this crap down. And, I mean, the girls would talk all the time about, you know, weird, you know, going up and down the stairs and people in different clothes and, you know, people sitting on the edges of their beds and stuff like that. So they eventually closed that down. Well, nowadays, Nicolas Cage bought it, and they said he's had it for a little bit over 5 years now. They think he might be the only owner to break this curse. But he doesn't live there. He refuses to stay there overnight. Absolutely refuses. He bought it. He'll eat lunch there or dinner there because it's in downtown French Quarter. It's right there by all the stuff. So he'll go there and visit, and he has caretakers that take care of it, but he doesn't set foot in that house.
Is there at night. Kind of a business run out of it right now, or it's just a private residence that he owns?
It's a private residence owned by him that he attends a few hours a day. They have a room that's immaculate for him that they lock up and seal off at night in case he decides to spend the night one of these days, but he never does. Every time the caretakers open that door, though, in the morning, the bedding's all messed up as if somebody had slept in there. But the whole, I mean, there's no way to get into this thing.
Totally just horrified me.
No. So, I mean, just crazy stuff like this happens, right? Well, this was that story I told you about where everybody's cell phones went off. This happened when we were there. There's a bunch of guys by there.
Calling for help.
There's a bunch of the guys that were with us, they were, like, standing there, and we had walked up to them. And then we were like, oh, you know, started talking about ghost stuff. And they're like, yeah, you know, we're hunting, too, or whatever. So we all walked up towards one of the gates, and that's when all of our phones started ringing, and we didn't have any missed calls on our phones.
Oh, God.
That was where it happened. It was Nick Cage's murder mansion now. So anyway, there also one of the guys I talked to is friends with one of the caretakers there. And the caretaker says, oh, there's still crap going on all the time. He said there's mysterious things happening. He said that the phone from the mansion, when Nick Cage is gone, he's like in another country even, you know, and they take care of it all the time, though. He said that they'll get calls on their cell phone from the house, and when they pick up, there's nothing there. Somebody in the house is calling their cell phone.
Yeah,
only the caretakers.
Crazy.
Then he said that one of the stories was that one of the caretakers was there and he was fixing something above a door, and he had his little girl there. She was probably like 6 or 7, and she was standing at the bottom holding the ladder her dad was on, and he wasn't that high up. It was just over a door. Well, the door that he was working above, the doorknob started to rattle, and then it turned and it opened, and the little girl standing right there looking at it and turned and opened, and there was nothing there, and it closed real fast. And the little girl told her dad, told her dad the story, and then one of the other guys that was working with him was standing there and saw it and told him too. He's like, oh, no, she ain't kidding. That freaking just happened. So the house is very much active and haunted to this day. Oh, yeah, good times.
Then, is he selling this house?
I know, right? Oh, my God. I'm like, I need to become friends with Nick Cage. I mean, like, Nick, I'll stay there. Don't worry about it, man.
I'll take care of your house.
Yeah, I'll take care of your house for you for the night. I'm drunk, Nick. Can I crash your place tonight?
You'll come out with 1-inch thick strips of skin missing off
you. Can you imagine? I mean, it was more horrible than that. There was something with the little boy. There was just so many horrible things that happened in the house.
I can't wrap my mind around how do you even come up with shit like that.
I don't know. I'm kind of thinking of doing it right now, actually. No, I'm kidding. No, then back what they used to do in the day was they'd have the slaves would get off the ship, and they'd immediately put the slaves in a holding cell until they could be taken out to Jackson Square and sold. Well, they would put them in 3 rows. The ones in the back probably weren't going to make it because the food had to go over them, you know, like it was passed back. So by the time food and water got to them, I mean, there was none left, you know. So, I mean, and they put 100 of these slaves. They tie them to hooks in the wall and put 100 of them in these little rooms that were off the street. I saw one of these. Oh my God. It has to be half the size of this room now. Has to be maybe 8 feet across and 15 feet down. And they stuffed 100 of these people in this room for weeks on end until they were sold. If you were in front, you were lucky because you were sold right away. You know, you were in front, they just grabbed you and sold you. If you were in the back, if you didn't die of hunger or starvation, you died of the disease that went rampant through there. Because if somebody got cholera, oh my God, the whole place had it and everybody was dead. So if the person in front of you died and had cholera and was dead, that's all leaking up on you and their dysentery kind of thing, you know, their bowels are releasing on you.
Yep.
Oh yeah. And if somebody had cholera and the whole thing went up, all the slaves were dead, like within, what'd they say, 3 or 4 days. They just took them out, threw them in a cart, burned the cart, and hosed the thing off for the next 100 slaves. That was their business. That's how they made their money. Nowadays, though, they say that if you go there, and I took some pictures and stuff, but I haven't looked at the pictures to see if I got anything. I took pictures of this place. Oh, my God, you could feel it. You feel the cold. You feel the – it's like – in New Orleans, the humidity's crazy. I mean, I had sweat rolling down my crack and places that I didn't even know I could, sweat could go. And here it is.
I was sliding places
on my ass crack sweat, you know. And so you go into these things, and it's instantly like 110 in one spot. You go in one spot, it's like 30 degrees.
Oh my
and you're like,
God.
Ooh. Then some people say that they stick their hands in certain places just inside the doorway, just over the doorway, and they feel like somebody's tugging them, like pulling them. There was kids put in there, too. Lots of ghost stories with that.
Jesus.
Good times. Not so good times for them. Good times for me. Then what else? Oh, my God, Pirate's Alley. Supposedly duels happen across the street. Oh, also Pirate's Alley is the home of one of the few absinthe bars that are in New Orleans. We'll give props to them. Awesome absinthe. Had some down there. It was awesome. It's legal, guys. Go down there and have some absinthe. I highly, highly recommend it. I recommend the Lucid brand. It's very good. In this alley, supposedly, they hear people arguing in French and Spanish because a lot of shady deals went down in that alley. That was where a lot of the pirates were when the city was first founded. That's where the Spanish government was in the governor's mansion. So there was shady stuff happening behind the governor's mansion, a lot of deals gone wrong. So sometimes they'll say you'll hear pistol shots and you'll hear French and Spanish screaming. And sometimes they say you'll see one guy said he actually saw a pirate man running down the alley with a sword held above his head. And he's like, he's thinking it's New Orleans, you know, and some crazy kook running around. And then he, like, realized he was looking through him as he was running. He's like, oh, dear, okay.
Touché, Monsieur Petitard, touché!
Just crazy stuff like that. And then there's the alley next to St. Louis Cathedral, totally haunted. They say if the weather's right, this haunting will happen. Because not going to get into the whole story because I know we're short on time. But when the French had it, they turned it over to Spain, their cousin. Well, the Spanish came in on their boat and said, okay. They lowered the flag and put their flag up. And it's okay, we own you now. I mean, no one knew about it until that very moment. So, of course, the 12 leaders of the French community at that time said, no, I don't think so. We're not getting overtaken by Spanish. So they held up a resistance and they basically beat the crap out of the leader and put him on his boat and sent him back to Spain. Well, he's like, no, I own your ass. My cousin from France gave you to me. So you're mine. So he sent his most psychotic mercenary, Mr. O'Reilly, who's an Irishman. We're all psychotic. Sancho! Anyway, sent him over, and this guy says, like, okay, you want to be like that? Cannons and fireballs and just all sorts of stuff, just wreaking havoc on the city. And then he goes, he sets up shop in the main area and goes, okay, you 12, come have dinner with me. Let's talk. Let's negotiate a peace treaty. I don't know where in their heads they thought this was a good idea. He said, I promise you will come here unmolested. I promise no one will attack you.
Oh, famous last freaking word.
Oh, they got there unmolested, but immediately were put in shackles, taken to the courtyard, shot, and left. Their families couldn't even come and pick up their carcasses. They left them there for like almost a month to rot in the street as a lesson to everybody else. So one night, the priest of St. Louis Cathedral gathered some of the heads of the families of these 12 guys, and they made little wooden boxes, and they made a mercenary thing. They said, okay, we'll run out there real fast, sweep up as much of your family members left, throw them in this wooden box, we'll run back in the church, we'll go out the side alley, and we'll take them down to the cemetery down the street. This was their big plan. So they do this, and it ends up happening because there's a huge storm going on that night. So most of the guards and everybody are inside or they're not paying attention. So they manage to get them. They go down this alley. They say if you go down this alley during a storm, you'll start to hear singing on all sides because they sang the death march. They sang the eulogy from the priest all the way from the steps of the church down the alley to the cemetery. So they say if you're out there in that alley and the weather's just right, you start to hear singing on all sides, and then it'll get louder and louder, and then all of a sudden it's all around you, and if you walk with it, it will literally walk you to the gates of the cemetery. Well, the cemetery's gone now, but where it once stood, and then all of a sudden you'll feel immense peace, and the singing will stop.
Oh,
it's crazy.
God.
And I was in that alley. I didn't hear the singing, but my God, the feeling you get being in that alley, the hair on the back of my neck, like, literally stood on end. I felt as if, like, I felt the presence of people in that alley that were not there. I was like, cool, picture. Okay, I got to go now because it was just too overwhelming. It was just the sadness and the just immense grief that overtook me. I was like, oh, my God, I got to get out of here. Crazy, crazy stuff. I mean, just tons of places. New Orleans is full of ghosts. New Orleans is like Chicago. It's one of the most haunted cities in the world. It had a bloody start. It had a violent start. It had a great fire that tore down, you know, most of its buildings. It had massacres. It had mutilations. It had depravity, just like Chicago. So there's tons of just, you walk in different places and there's tons of ghost stories everywhere. You know, people say they go by Marie Laveau's grave. She's buried in St. Louis Cemetery number 1. They say they go by the cemetery at night and they see a woman in white walking around the cemetery. You know, I mean, just weird, crazy stuff that people say they see, you know. I don't know. Oh, the vampire thing. I will mention this real fast. I'm not going to get too much into the vampire thing, although I could, but New Orleans has a huge, huge history of vampires. Huge. Like, that is, like, one of the biggest cities in America where vampires ran rampant. Like, the legend, the lore, the history, the whole, I mean, and we'll have to do this another show. I'll have to bring on some of the people I was talking to and have them on, because I'm pretty sure they'll come on. They're not actually vampires. They're just, like, historians of what happened in the city. So I'll have to bring them on. I'm sure they'll do it. But basically, I'm not going to get into all this stuff at the whole other show, but they had these brothers, like, one story of vampires on it. I mean, there's been so much murder and missing bodies in New Orleans that has been, like, people just say, oh, it's vampires. Like, even the police at some time just said, another case of vampirism. Anyway, back in, I can't remember what it was, like the 1800s, early 1800s, these brothers were there. And they were, this little girl escaped, and she ran to the police station, and she said she'd been held captive, and these brothers were drinking her blood. So they're like, what? So they go to this apartment, and they find that she said she was tied up in a chair. They slit her left arm and would suck her blood, close it, like, bandage it, and just keep reopening the wound every day and drank her for like 3 days. So they went back to this apartment. The brothers were gone. They weren't there at that time. They go to the apartment. They find like 4 other people tied to chairs. An older woman, a 12-year-old boy. There's a couple other people there. Like, and one of them was dead, a dead woman laying in the chair with her arm cut open. And they were feeding off these people for days on end. They said they fed off the little boy for like 11 days straight. Then they go in this other room, and there's 17 carcasses piled up.
Shut
just up on top of another against the wall. So they eventually caught the brothers. They you know, killed them, buried them in the cemetery. Well, they were saying that something seemed odd when they buried them. There was just something weird with the burial. They ended up, as soon as that ended, there was another rash of extreme cannibalistic vampire kind of murders in the city. And they're like, what the hell? And then they talked to people that lived in the same building with the brothers after they were dead. And they said, we see them walking up the stairs to the apartment. We see them in the apartment. We hear them outside, you know, like, what are you talking about? They're dead. They're not dead. They went and they uncovered the caskets. There were no bodies in the caskets. Supposedly. I mean, I don't have anybody from that time period that could back me up, but
they're immortal, so they're still around.
But think about it. If vampirism is true, think about how this rally, I mean, there's so many, just, and then there's a lot of homeless in New Orleans. So who's to know if a couple of them are missing?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, who's to know, really? I mean, just crazy little stories like that.
I don't know if that's where the eternal life vampires masquerade as, that they're just running around the streets as homeless.
And Anne Rice is big down there. I ran into her best friend down there when I was visiting with the Paraplex people. I ran into her best friend, and we were chatting, and she was telling me lots of different stuff about the vampire, you know. It's a thing out there. It's huge down there. And a lot of the locals still say that certain murders that come up today are vampire related. There is, I will mention this, there is a bar, if you're in New Orleans, you need to go to. It is supposedly, I got the tip off, it is supposedly, how do you say, it's not technically a vampire bar, but supposedly if you're there will be people in there that will ask you to come back to their apartment, or they'll ask you to do certain things, and they're known by the community in which they are as being vampire-oriented.
Oh.
So who knows what that means? Who knows if they're just sanguinarians, just drinking people's blood? Who knows what's going on with that? But that bar is called The Dungeon, and it's on 2 Louise Street, and that is actually the area in which a lot of vampire-related stuff is happening. So if anybody's really interested in that, head down there, check it out. If you do sit in that bar, I was around that bar, yes, I will admit it. There are some people there. I was not approached and asked anything because I was only there very briefly. But I just wanted to check it out and just say I saw it. But I didn't have a chance because most of my trip this time was voodoo and some of the ghost stuff. When I go back, I'm going to concentrate on the vampire aspect of New Orleans because it's huge, huge.
Wow.
So I just dipped into it, but I found out some names again from some good sources, found some names of some people I need to talk to that will kind of take me into dark, seedy places I should not be going, which I'm all about going. And Techie is like, yes, I'm there with you. So good time.
Yes, I agree.
No, so
I'll volunteer to be taken home.
Now, I will tell you this one story. Supposedly, I didn't see this happen. I didn't see anybody get approached when I was there. Supposedly, this one guy was approached at the bar, the dungeon. He was in town. He heard about it. I got to check this out. He goes. He checks it out. He's approached by a small group of people. They ask him to come back to their place. He does it, thinking it's some sort of ritual or something. They'll drink his blood. He'll drink theirs. They'll all have a gay old time in New Orleans, you know? They found him the next morning. He was dead in the bathtub. There was nothing in the place, just him in the bathtub, and his skin was completely gone from his body. Now, there is supposedly in European folklore and in a lot of different religions, I believe Norse too, they have characters or creatures that do this, and I think they were calling them boo hags or something, and what they do is they're vampire-type creatures that completely remove the skin off your body. And it's sort of like a ritualistic thing for them, and they wear the skin and stuff like that.
Buffalo Bill.
Kind of like Buffalo Bill. So anyway, they were saying that that's how they found him.
Oh.
So if you go to the dungeon, guys, please be careful, because you may wind up skinned in a bathtub.
I still volunteer.
Oh, we're going back. I'm spending more time there next time. No, next time.
I'm walking out with no skin. Good girl.
You're walking out. Hey, how do you like my new look?
Do I look good? Am I having a good hair day? What hair? You have no hair.
It's like that little muscle thing. Those
bastards, they took my hair.
That's their hair. That is their hair. I feel like watching Family Guy now, apparently. I've been chanting it all evening. No, seriously. New Orleans rocked, guys. I'm not even talking about all the crazy stuff
Let's
I did.
Go next
like,
week.
Everyone goes for Bourbon Street. Yeah, we did Bourbon Street, you know, a few nights, whatever. It was awesome. We did all the window shopping. We did all the little stuff. We did the cemeteries. We did everything. There's tours there. You know, whatever you want to do. There's so much to do in New Orleans. We did everything. The only thing I didn't do was I got a little bit into the vampire stuff, and I said, no, I'm saving this for another thing because I'm already immersed in voodoo. I spent, like, 2 days in the voodoo ghost thing and like, chasing people around and talking to people. So I was like, nah, I'll chill on the vampire thing for now. But seriously, oh, it rocked. It was totally crazy. Weird stuff happened. The people we met, I can honestly say I'm probably the only person to have ever been serenaded in the French Quarter in Pirate's Alley by a crazy man to Sweet Transvestite.
While you were holding snakeskin.
No, I didn't have the snakeskin at that time.
Okay.
No. Oh, wait, did I? Yes, I did. I did have the same skin. That is funny. Oh, my God. No, seriously. This guy comes up, and we start chatting. And, you know, we chat with all the drunk people everywhere, you know, because that's the fun thing to do. That's how we roll. So we're chatting with this drunk guy, and we start talking about Rocky Horror Picture Show. He's completely trashed. He is belting out Rocky Horror Picture Show to me. He's belting them, and I'm cackling because I'm drunk, and I'm thinking it's just as funny, you know. So I'm like, ah! I can honestly say I'm probably the only person that's been serenaded by Rocky Horror Picture Show, specifically Sweet Transvestite in the French Quarter. Insane. Insane times. You know what I'm saying?
You should have asked him for Time Warp. That's my favorite one.
It's just a step to that.
And then a touch of the rap.
It's good times. It's good times. No, it was awesome. Oh, my God. The people we met down there. I mean, besides the people that, you know, tipped us off to the – yeah, it was those guys. Yeah. Besides the people that tipped us off to all the cool little underground voodoo stuff, it was tremendous, guys. And the ghost stuff, and I mean, it's just tremendous city, tremendous history, and some crazy stuff happened to us. I don't know. Was that like a good roundabout New Orleans thing for you guys?
I thought it was a good overview.
Awesome, awesome.
Thanks for the overview.
Well, you know what? We're going to go, and next week when we come back, we're going to have I can't remember his name right now, and I'm going, this is horrible. We have a famous author on next week. Walter, yeah.
Somebody.
I'm still drunk, so I'm sorry. No, we have a famous author on next week, and we're going to get back into the craziness. Gypsy Ann, Tech Guy Yet, and myself will be all about insanity. We're going to start initiating something new to the show, a little bit of something I call the round table to the show. So it's going to be exciting, guys. You're not going to want to miss it. It's going to be insane. But thanks for listening to our New Orleans-esque stuff, and I'm sure I'll be slipping more stories that happen because there's no way I could get everything that happened to me out in this show. So I'm sure over time there'll be random stories that pop out, like, when did that happen to you, New Orleans? So good times. But thanks for listening, guys. And anything?
Oh, yeah. Happy Father's Day.
Oh, yeah. It's Father's Day.
Yeah. Happy Father's Day.
Wow, we completely blew that one, didn't we? Thanks, Jen, for keeping us up on that. Anyway, the three of us yokels will be back next week. We're going to take us out as Mojo and the Bayou Gypsies. We're going to get some red hot Mojo. Woo!
Chicago. We got the party.